you're listening to the Crazy Over 40s Live podcast, a podcast designed to revolutionize the way we think about our midlife. Yes, let's celebrate this beauty of this transformative period. It's time to embrace our curiosity and unleash our desires and rediscover the power of our adolescence. Yes, we're doing it all over again. I promise you, on every episode, we shall be exploring everything from relationships, emotional well-being, sexual empowerment, to financial stability, just overall wellness. Each episode is packed with empowering insights, actionable advice, and heartfelt stories from real people who have conquered the challenges of the midlife. Expect tears, laughter, and joy. So join me every Thursday, Caroline Brown. And don't forget to share and subscribe so you can keep updated on all the episodes as and when they become available. Available on all platforms. Listen in to the next episode. How's your ticker? You know, your heart health 101? That's what we shall be covering on today's episode. And I'm your host, Caroline Brown. I shall be bringing you answers because we have someone in today who can answer all of the questions, such as the myths and misconceptions about heart health, lifestyle choices, habits, genetics, family history. What about gender? Is there a difference between men and women and heart health? Pregnant women or individuals with chronic conditions like diabetes. Well, Mr. Franco Chudy has taken time out of his busy surgery. He's UK's leading consultant cardiothoracic surgeon. He's based in Bristol and operates both at the Spire Hospital Bristol and Bristol Heart Institute. He has performed over 5,000 open heart procedures since being there since over 30 years ago. He also has an interest in coronary artery bypass surgery, which amounts to over 75% of his work. He's also appeared in peer-reviewed journals, as well as the reputable textbook, Magassi Essential of Thoracic Cardiac Surgery. He's also appeared in Deep in the Heart, a documentary that follows patients for several months as they undergo life-saving surgery at the Bristol Heart Institute. It's a wonderful watch. It's on Amazon. Don't go anywhere. He's taking his time out of his bridging surgery and his consultant work. Come back after the interlude. I shall be joined along with you with Mr. Franco Chudy. He's one of the UK's consultant cardiothoracic surgeons. Hello, listeners. As I said to you before, we shall be joined by Mr. Franco Chudy. He's a consultant cardiothoracic surgeon at the Spire Hospital Bristol and Bristol Heart Institute. Hello, how are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about the affairs of the heart, but the most kind of important heart, really, because I think we kind of underestimate how important it is to keep our heart as healthy as possible. But I thought it'd be great to have you on. I know you're very busy and I've given you an introduction prior to kind of getting you on right now. But could you just expand on a little bit about what you do and what brought you into the work that you're currently undertaking at the moment?
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. I've been a cardiac surgeon now for most of my life, I think. I started already as a medical student. I knew that I was going to want to get into the specialty. And in fact, from the age of 10, I was interested in surgery and heart surgery. And I guess what brought me into it was the fact that in those years, there was a lot of media attention on heart surgery. Barnard had done the first transplants in South Africa. Then that became more diffuse around the world. And just as a little boy, I became interested in this specialty for some reason. I like pulling things apart and putting things back together as a young child, so I guess that was part of it. My grandfather had a heart attack at one stage, as I grew older, and I was interested to know what had happened, how it happened, what was a heart attack, how it was connected to the lungs. I just generally became interested in medicine and cardiac surgery in particular. I used to go to the library, those things that hardly exist anymore because everything's on the internet now, but I used to go to the library and devour books on medicine, history of medicine, and so on. So as I grew older and got into high school, and then I really decided that that's the path that I wanted to pursue, and I got into university, and again, that was, of course, undergraduate studies where you had to study everything, but my real interest was cardiac surgery, and I pursued that until I got into the specialty, and here I am, some 35 years later, still working hard and enjoying it every day.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And you do work really hard. And it just goes to show that how many years it does take to be in the field that you're in.
Yes, I mean it was 5 years at university, then 6 years specializing, and that's just the start. Because of course, once you become a specialist, you have to gain all the experience. So it doesn't happen overnight, of course. But my main message, I guess, is that you have to have a passion. You have to have a passion for whatever job you do. But especially medicine and a specialty like this, because it can be very, very rewarding, but it's very long hours and sometimes not easy. Certainly for me, it has been the most rewarding profession I could have hoped for.
I mean, how unique is your position? Because how many heart surgeons are there out there?
Well, in the UK, there's about 200 specialist heart surgeons who do just what I do. So throughout the whole territory, including England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. So there's not that many of us, and we all generally know each other from meetings and congresses and so on, where we share information. But yes, there's not that many.
Yeah, and that's how I suppose special your job is. And I know we all do appreciate having people in the field that you're in who know their work very well. And that's why I thought it'd be really lovely to have you on. So thank you. Let's talk about the heart and why is it important for people to take care of their heart in the over 40s. I know we've laughed about it a little bit, oh, why is the heart important? Well, what other things do people, why people could sort of take care of their heart a little bit better?
Well, you know, when we're young in our 20s, we all think we're invincible, and that's not the case. And as we get over 40, we do have to look after things, not just the heart, our whole bodies. And we can't keep on doing the things that we were doing maybe when we were in our 20s. The heart is one. We've only got one heart. And we have to treat it nicely because if you want to live a long and healthy life, you have to just look after things. And we know very well now what things affect the heart in the long run. We're not invincible. We're not unbreakable. And we do have to look after the heart, as well as other organs, of course, and stay as healthy as possible. We only know when we've lost something how precious it was, and when we lose our health, that is particularly important to us and our quality of life. And I guess what we have most precious to us on this earth is time. And of course, if you don't have your health, you don't have the time then to enjoy life. So it's really important to look after all of you, but especially your heart, because what I see from my end is a lot of people who have not done that, and particularly things like smoking and high blood pressure and high cholesterol, which are all things that we can modify in our lives. And a real special message to the younger generations that I see a little bit more smoking is going on now around those age groups, and that is not good. That is really not good because it affects the heart in a major way.
Okay, let's talk about that. I'm glad you raised that because I thought there was a time when smoking was like a taboo, but since this new style of kind of initiating people into a kind of like in a fashionable way, you know, the different color of the vaping cigarettes makes it a little bit more fashionable or a little bit more hip, I would say. So can you tell us exactly, taking away the layers of the appearance of this vapor, what would you say is the main concern and why starting smoking early is a big contribution to poor heart, healthy heart?
Well, smoking has always been a problem for the heart and the lungs. If you consider that the lungs are a one-way street, you know, what goes in doesn't necessarily come out.
Right.
It all just sits there and you absorb it into your bloodstream, and then it goes into the coronary arteries that feed the heart the nutrients that it needs to pump every day. And if you think that your heart normally pumps 60, 70 times a minute, every minute of the day, day and night, and it cannot ever fail, it cannot ever stop. Imagine having an engine that can do that. It will soon fail if it's not maintained properly, if we don't give it the right nutrients, if we don't give it the right oil and the right petrol, it'll soon stop. Except the heart cannot stop because that means that life is over. So it is so important to not destroy it. And smoke, it does exactly that because it binds with the hemoglobin, which is the transporter of oxygen in our bloodstream, and it stops the oxygen from getting to the right places at the right time. You know, we're so careful going to the gym and getting, you know, good bodies and looking good and healthy. But then, you know, if you start smoking, that really negates all those positive things that you've done. So it's really, really important that smoking is not a feature in your life. We already breathe in so many pollutants in the air, the cars, the trucks, the tractors, the buses, and so on. Polluting at the air that we breathe every day, especially in the big cities. You put on top of that smoking as well. It is just a real poison to the bloodstream. So I cannot emphasize how important that is. And we're seeing these coronary arteries now in other countries where smoking is not a taboo, and people are becoming ill with it a lot younger. So we're seeing 30 and 40-year-olds with heart attacks.
Okay. Oh,
Fortunately, in this country, it has become a taboo, and people who smoke are not really looked on favorably, especially in public places, which is really good. But I fear that the youngsters, it's coming in a little bit. As you said, with the vaping, and if we look back at the origins of vaping, it was actually introduced to try to wean people off cigarette smoking.
okay, right.
But unfortunately, it's become a trendy now.
Yeah, and I think that's the important part to cover, because there's quite a few people I know in the over 40s that I've seen, not personally know, but I've seen who do vape, and for the very reasons that they're trying to get themselves off nicotine. What is the kind of the difference really? Because I think people are feeling that, well, it's the best of the two things. What would you say about that?
Well, it depends how you vape and whether you're on some form of weaning schedule. And that's fine if that's what you're trying to do. That's what it was designed for. But I fear for the 20-year-olds who are going and finding it trendy to vape because their friends are vaping, and peer pressure is really strong at that age. And I think it's probably just as bad, if not worse, because we don't know what the effects of warming of these chemicals are. You're inhaling them, and the possible cancer effect, the possible effect on the coronary arteries that are affecting the heart, we'll only know when it's too late. Because the effects can come out in 10, 20 years' time.
And talking about years, can I ask you, because one of the things I wanted the answer to, there are people who live a very healthy lifestyle, but genetics play an important factor in the heart health. Can you explain why?
Yes. Well, we can't choose our parents, can we? So
No.
genetics are really important. So if you have coronary disease or heart disease in your family, you are more likely to get a problem with your heart. That's for sure. But if you put other risk factors on top of that, like smoking, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and you have family history of coronary disease and heart attacks, then your health will be affected a lot earlier. So I've operated on 30-year-olds who have been smoking and have had coronary disease in their family. Whereas I've operated also on 70 or 80-year-olds that have had the same but have not smoked and have looked after their health. And they come and complain and says, "Oh, I've always looked after myself. I'm not overweight. I've done lots of exercise. I've kept an outlook on my cholesterol." And I said, "Yes, it's really unfair. But if you hadn't looked after yourself, we would have been seeing you, 20, 30 years ago." And as I said at the very beginning, health is the most precious thing that we have, along with time. And if you lose your health, you start a rather long and precarious road to, well, to not being as well and as healthy and as vibrant and as playful as you normally would have been. And you need help then, you become less independent. So the whole host of factors, that you don't consider when you're healthy, because until you lose your health, you don't know what you have. So it's really, really important that people, especially with strong family history, that they keep as healthy as possible, from all those risk factors that we've said.
And you talk about taking care of your heart, and I think one of the things that people underestimate are the stress levels in their life. We live in very hectic lives, as always, it's always been that way. But why, tell us why stress levels can have impact on other conditions, health conditions.
So stress is one of the major risk factors, and we know that there's the good stress and the bad stress. So the good stress is the one that drives you, that makes you ambitious, that makes you want to achieve. The bad stress is the worrying that you take home with you and doesn't make you sleep at night. And what happens with stress is that we release various substances in our bodies, which are a stress response. such as cortisol, which is a hormone, and adrenaline, and all sorts of things that go on between the brain and the hormone system in our bodies. And that causes a tightening and a hardening of the arteries. And it has a whole host of other side effects as well, not just on the arteries, but it can cause cancer, it can cause all sorts of things in people who are susceptible to it. So yes, we live in a society which is high on stress, where we're driven by industry all the time to achieve more and more and more, and it's just human nature to be stressed. But you need to find a balance in your life, and I think that's the key word is balance. And if you can achieve a balance between the stresses that you can't modify and the downtime and the having time with your families and with your partners and going out into nature and having time to have a walk every day and just exercising your body. It doesn't mean going to the gym necessarily, but it just means a good 30 minutes every day of a good walk. That's really important. And I know that some people will drive to the supermarket 10 minutes to get to buy their food and come back for 10 minutes in the car, and that time would be better spent walking there and back. But there's various ways of doing it, and I think the making time for yourself to exercise. We weren't built to drive a car to the supermarket. We were built to go out and into the wilderness and hunt for our food and pick the berries and do all that. And now in modern society, we've got a lot of conveniences. You don't even have to drive now. You can stay at home on the couch and the food will be delivered to you. We have to use our bodies a little bit better to maintain that health.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that, because it's kind of made me think about the gender factor in it all. Do you see a difference between men and women, and even women who are pregnant in terms of heart health?
Yeah, so women are fortunate in terms of heart because they tend to get heart disease a little bit later on in life. So they're protected by their hormones, I always say, because before the menopause, you have less likely to have heart disease, especially coronary disease. Afterwards, after the menopause, then the likelihood of getting coronary disease becomes nearly as high as the men. The men, even from the age of 30, 40, can develop coronary disease if especially if they have a family history, as we were saying. In terms of pregnancy, again, it's a great thing, the pregnancy, because it protects women from coronary disease. But women who have already got a predisposition to valve problems in their heart, this can be exacerbated. So it's really, really important for women who are considering a pregnancy or who are pregnant to make sure that their heart is healthy, and that's by seeing their GP, who can listen to the heart, and if there's anything that is worrisome, they can do several investigations, like an echocardiogram, which is just an ultrasound of the heart. It's very simple to do, and that can be easily done.
Because I thank you. Because one of the things that I always wanted to know the answer to really is babies. Well, during the period when the gestation period, why did they have heart difficulties?
So some babies are born with heart defects, which can be quite simple, like a little hole in the heart, which is benign and doesn't need anything doing to it, and they can live a long and healthy life. Lots of people know that they have a hole in the heart and nothing's ever happened to them, and it's fine. Two very complex situations which need a surgical intervention, sometimes, even as soon as they're born. But they are very rare, and but that is the whole purpose of doing prenatal ultrasounds of the baby, because certain things can be picked up by those ultrasounds on the tummy of the mummy.
And advancement, medical advancement has come a long way in terms of making sure people get the right treatment for heart difficulties and complications. Can you tell me how medication has helped so far? And also, what advancements has happened recently, positively? And also some of the things that we need to really consider in terms of that we only have one heart, which you mentioned. So the chances of getting a replacement is difficult, but also what are the alternatives to that?
Wow, that's a huge question.
It
Well, let's go step by step. So in
step
terms of diagnostics, we have some phenomenal equipment now, such as ultrasound, where we can see a lot of detail, even just with what we couldn't do 20 years ago, just with a simple ultrasound, which is a little probe on the surface, in between the ribs, and a little bit of jelly, we can see a lot. Then there's a CT scan of the heart where we can see the coronaries, and they inject a little bit of dye into the bloodstream, and we can actually see how the heart is working and if there are any problems. And then ultimately, the MRI scan, where you get put through a scanner. And we see a lot of detail in terms of actually the function of the muscle. So we can actually see the muscle beating and contracting, and it's even its single fibers. Really, really interesting stuff. And we can reconstruct everything 3D from the heart all the way down, all around the aorta, all the way through the blood system. The diagnostics has really progressed a lot, which means that we can act on things that sometimes go wrong, which can be congenital, so you have them from birth, or they can be acquired, which means that you've acquired them through just a normal aging process. In terms of intervention, heart intervention is again really interesting, and it has developed so much. Even just over the last 10 years, there's been some major changes. So we can go in with catheters instead of having to do open heart surgery these days. Just throw a catheter through a vein in the groin or the wrist, and we can feed the catheter into the heart and explore the heart and deliver stents, for example, that open up the coronary arteries, a bit like lining a chimney, just to give you an idea. So you put this stent, which is a metal cage, which self-expands in the coronary artery and opens up the coronary artery to deliver more blood to that area. We can put valves in that way now. Some of your listeners may have heard of a TAVI valve. Which means that we can put an aortic valve in through a catheter from the femoral artery in your groin, and it's wrapped up in a catheter, and the valve is delivered through that catheter, and we position it very carefully with X-rays and ultrasound, and we release the catheter, and the valve springs into place. And this is now done with local anesthetic, even. We can do mitral valve repairs, which is something that I specialize in. Again, with a clip that goes in through the groin, and literally, we can repair the valve that's leaking, or replace the valve if necessary, just through a little stab wound in the groin. which repairs itself very quickly, and you go home after 2 or 3 days. All the way through to major open heart surgery, which again is something that I've specialized in over the last 30 years. And that open heart surgery means that we have to go through the ribs or through the sternum. We put the heart on the heart-lung machine, and we stop the heart and operate on whatever part of it is necessary, to replace a valve or to do some coronary bypasses with. We do some surgery for arrhythmias, so people who have a lot of palpitations, we can act on those. And there's lots of new developments all the way through to, if nothing else is possible, to replacing the heart with a heart transplant. But we're doing less and less of those for a variety of reasons. And the
Okay.
main reason is because the medication that is available to us these days is phenomenally good. And so a lot of patients that maybe 20 years would have had a heart transplant now are on tablets. And these tablets are very, very good, long lasting, and they help the heart to get better.
Right. And that's the beauty of advancement. And you talked about the replacement, heart transplant replacement. Do they still use pig's hearts at all, or is that something they didn't know?
So that was something that was going on in the 80s and 90s because there weren't enough hearts, donor hearts, to go around the whole community. When I worked in Papworth, we were doing 100 heart transplants a year, and so was Harefield in London, and so was Manchester. And so now that's decreased nearly by half. So we don't need as many heart transplants as we used to because of this medication. So the Pig Heart Project was something that went on during the 80s and 90s. People are still trying to develop the genetics so that we can transplant tissues from animals. The pig is the closest that we have to the human in terms of genetics. So it's the easiest one to manipulate. The experiments there are not as widespread as they used to be, but they're still through genetics trying to develop some cells, for example, for diabetics that can be injected. And so they wouldn't have to inject insulin all the time. For people that have cystic fibrosis, for example, the genetic modifications are well advanced. So we're hoping that in the not too distant future, that can be a prime source. We used to have to. And we still have to transplant lungs and heart lungs in cystic fibrosis patients that had got into the 20s and were at the end of the road. So to give them a better quality of life and longevity, but this is now going to be taken over by genetics. So yes, there's still experimentation going on. We haven't found the ultimate solution yet, but genetic therapy is going to be surely better than surgery in the long term.
Okay. And so what brings me on to arts now is what are the misconceptions that you like to challenge or debunk right now about heart?
Well, the first one, I guess, is we only have one heart and we need to look after it. And to think that you're invincible, that is a real misconception. We do in Bristol, we do over 1,000 operations a year, open heart operations. The cardiologists do thousands and thousands of angioplasties, which is the catheter going into the coronaries and delivering a stent. So there's a lot of people who require heart intervention, and thinking that you can smoke, you can drink, you can eat whatever you like. That is mistreating your body and especially your heart. So that is the first misconception. The second thing I think that's important is that we can do something about a heart disease. We always go by the dogma that avoiding heart disease is always better, but we are there to deliver a service and to help people who unfortunately have developed this. So, unfortunately, diabetics are particularly prone to coronary disease, and so the more they look after the diabetes, the better it is. Some don't, and we see them very early on. So smoking is definitely one of the worst culprits, and it is not a benign thing to do. And I would warn any of your listeners to just stop. The best way to stop is just go cold turkey if you can, because every single cigarette that you put in your mouth or every single vape that you put in your mouth is detrimental to your health somewhere along the line, from cancer of the tongue all the way to the heart. So those are probably the most important things that I would say.
Yeah. And to see more of your work, actually, for those that I mentioned before, Deep in the Heart, which is a documentary about following four patients over several months that underwent life-saving surgery at the Bristol Heart Institute. What was that like for you to do that, to go through all that? And why was it important for you to document that?
Well, this was a drug company that financed it, and they didn't want to be mentioned, so I'm not going to mention who it was. And they
Okay.
went to a film a company in Bristol, and they said, "Here's some money. We want you to produce a film on cardiovascular disease for the younger generations." And we were just around the corner, so they came to do some interviews and find out a little bit more about what they could film. And I was selected as the surgeon on the project. So they followed me around for a good 2 years, and they filmed various patients, and four of which are on the film. It's a proper feature film. It's about 90 minutes long, and it does follow the lives outside of the surgery as well of some of these patients. And you see just about everything that we've talked about today. It was an interesting experience for me because, first of all, I saw how a film is made. And it is really an art form, and I really enjoyed how they put things together, how they film it, how they edit it, and how they put the scenes and the music and the talking together. I think they really did a good job of describing the lives of these patients and how they see it from their perspective when they get diseases of the heart, and their thought processes, and it delves really into their psyche a little bit to understand the denial sometimes of what is going on. And I think it's really worthwhile. I've shown my children even, and they've seen it a number of times. and they glued to it because the way that it has been done is you're on the edge of your seat saying to some of them, what are you doing? You're smoking and you're having heart surgery, or you're eating fish and chips and you're having heart, or you've just had heart surgery. And I think that it's a good portrayal, of a cross section of society that we don't always see, and it just looking a little bit in the mirror as well. So I would say that it's a good film to watch if you've got nothing else to do one evening.
Now, actually, I've watched it, as I shared with you. It's available on Amazon Prime and it's deep in the heart. And I really enjoyed it because not only does it take you through, I mean, your work, which is to any other person going it looking at it, it just seems so far removed from anyone being able to do, and so it must take a psychological journey for you. But what was so lovely is that you engaging with your patients. I found that a very human experience, that you're there, you're doing your work, and you're very focused on what you're doing, obviously. But then there was a very human element to it too, which brought me back to the fact that perhaps, do you sometimes find that you're doing two roles or you're wearing two hats sometimes?
Well, we're not taking out ingrown toenails. We're doing surgery that is life changing for these patients, and while we see that little moment of time where I see them in the outpatient clinic to start with and explain that they need open heart surgery, and then they come in for their surgery and they're with us for about a week. And then I see them again once after 6 weeks. That is but a little moment in time of their lives. But we have to consider all the time that it's taken to get to that stage beforehand, where they've been worried that what's wrong with my heart? I'm getting breathless, I'm getting chest pain, the thoughts of dying, the thoughts of your heart having finite life. How can I change this? All these thoughts going through your head, and then finally getting to see the cardiologist who makes the diagnosis, and then being referred to me. It's a big, long process, and unfortunately, in the NHS at the moment, it's a very long process because of the waiting times. And then finally they get to have the surgery, and life changes because you get a second lease in life, you get a second opportunity. And a lot of people take it seriously and they start becoming healthier and doing their exercise and doing all the things that they hadn't done before because they know that life is precious and suddenly it could terminate if they don't look after themselves. And then, of course, all the period afterwards. And we don't see all of that, but we have them for that little moment of time. And of course, they open up to you. They say that they will never smoke again, but of course they will say that when I'm there brandishing the knife. Some of them do, some of them don't. But it is a life-changing experience for them. So of course, we're not just the person with the knife in their hand. We're also sometimes a confidant. Sometimes they open up about their lives, about their stresses, about their family. The thing I learned when I was a registrar in Glasgow for one of our consultants, actually, who was the nicest man, and he was there with this little old lady in a bed and was adjusting her pillow, and that was a real moment where I learned something, that these are not just names on the end of a bed or a hospital number. They're actually real people with real dilemmas and real worries. And I guess that's what I try to replicate in my practice as well, is to treat them as such and to talk to them and to find out a little bit more about them as time goes on.
Yeah, and it shows very well in the documentary, the human element of it all. It's amazing watch. And shows that, there is someone behind it who's obviously passionate about what they do. And you spoke about that in the beginning, about what led you to do your work. And so what is your future looking like in the world of heart?
So, we're trying to do our surgeries and our interventions more and more minimally invasively, so it has less impact on the patient's lives afterwards. So we use more wires to do the surgeries with. We use smaller incisions, and that's what we particularly excel in, I think, in our type of surgery now. Nowadays, we get the patients home within 4 or 5 days now after major heart surgery, and it used to be 2 weeks in hospital. So that's major advancements. But the important thing is that what we're doing is long lasting. So, we do a lot of valve repairs, for example, where the patients maintain their own tissues. So we don't have to put a prosthetic valve in necessarily, and that works very well, and it makes the heart better even. So there's a lot of things that we try to do with smaller and smaller incisions, and I think that really is the future.
Wonderful. So, any parting words for my listeners?
Keep healthy. And both mind and body, and look after all aspects of your life, not just work. I know it's easily said, but it is really important if you want to have a good life and a long life. But the most important thing is a good quality of life.
Wonderful. And you know your details. If someone's interested in obviously, the work that you do, would like to have some investigations done, where can they find your details?
So I have a website. You can look me up on Top Doctors, or you can just phone the Bristol Heart Institute and ask to speak to my secretary, if you wanted an appointment. But it's all there, it's all on the internet.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the Crazy Over 40s Live podcast.
My great pleasure. All the best to you.
Thank you. Thank you once again to Mr. Franco Ciulli. He's one of the UK's leading consultant cardiothoracic surgeons. We shall have more for you in terms of midlife transformation. We shall be joined by Kathy Bister, who is a mindset, mindfulness, and mood coach. She's here to tell us what the three pillars of growth is for energetic bodies and how they can help with setting up goals and creating good habits. And what are you missing in your midlife? What are your experiences? Sounds familiar? Well, tune in to the next Crazy Over 40s Live podcast. And don't forget to share and subscribe to get episodes just like this. Right, I'm your host, Caroline Brown, and I shall see you on the next episode.